VOA Press Conference USA. Here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Joining me on the program is VOA Congressional Correspondent Cindy Sain. Our topic on this edition of the program, two former senators, one Republican and one Democrat, sound the alarm on the hyper-partisanship in U.S. politics. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Our special guests on this edition of the program are two of the most prominent senators of recent time who served in their respective parties' leadership positions from the 1990s into the current century, and they have almost 60 years of service between them. Former Senator Tom Daschle is a Democrat from the state of South Dakota, and former Senator Trent Lott is a Republican from the state of Mississippi. They have co-authored a new book entitled Crisis Point, Why We Must and How We Can Overcome Our Broken Politics in Washington and Across America. The book decries the current polarization in U.S. politics, which has stymied the ability to govern and has eroded the people's faith in government. Using both historical and current examples, the senators, who despite their very real ideological differences, show how debate and opposing opinions both shaped our country and are necessary for its future. Despite the tumultuous times in which they both served, they witnessed the Reagan tax cuts, a deadlocked Senate, the Clinton impeachment, the 9/11 terror attacks on U.S. soil, and the Iraq War, Senators Daschle and Lott have always maintained a positive working relationship, one almost inconceivable in today's hyper-partisan climate. Unfortunately, Washington has come to the point where compromise is seen as weakness and working across the aisle is deemed traitorous. In their book Crisis Point, Senators Lott and Daschle point to many factors that have fostered the current state of polarized politics, including the perpetual campaign, the 24/7 news cycle, and the unprecedented amounts of money. They underscore the urgent need for courage in leadership, which can bridge the divide between disparate sides. They talk of the necessity of debate and also the imperative of compromise. And Senators Daschle and Lott join us by phone from their respective offices in Washington. Senator Daschle, first to you. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Carol. Good to be with you.
And Senator Lott, welcome to you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with the Voice of America, Carol.
And as always, I'm very delighted to welcome my colleague, Cindy Sain.
Thank you.
Well, Senator Daschle, let me begin with you. Do you think the Founding Fathers might have predicted the degree of polarization we're seeing in today's politics? What do you think are the major factors that have contributed to this hyper-partisanship and polarization?
Well, I think the Founding Fathers knew that it was going to be a very rocky road. In fact, some of our Founding Fathers even opposed the creation of parties themselves for the fear that it might do just that. Having said that, of course, they had some tough times, too. They had gun battles and fist fights and a whole array of things that, fortunately, at least so far, we've not had to face. But I think a whole array of things have caused it. First of all, I think people don't spend the amount of time in Washington like they used to. That's driven in part by the chase for money. We've spent and raised more than we've ever done before, and that's a huge factor. I think the media has been a big factor as well. They used to be the referee, now they're the participants, and that makes a big difference. I think the gerrymandering, creating districts around the country that are predictably Republican or Democratic, allows the base in either party to be even more powerful and consequential. And I think as you look at this polarization, the debate has become more incendiary, more politicized, largely philosophically, but I think exacerbated by the social media in particular. I could go on, but those are some of the factors that have made a big difference in recent years.
Senator Trent Lott, let me get you to weigh in. Anything to add or subtract to that list of factors?
No, I certainly agree with that. But we talk about in this book, the first part of it, we talk about history. You know, our founders believed and knew that with this form of government, debate and compromise would not always be clean and easy. They would be pushing and pulling. And when our country was founded, it was difficult before and during, obviously, and in the aftermath of the Civil War. And we've had other difficult times. But I don't think they anticipated that you would get to the point of gridlock where you just can't move hardly anything anymore. So Tom outlined a lot of the issues. The amount of time that's spent in fundraising is part of the problem. We both agree very strongly that members don't spend enough time in Washington. They don't bring their families. So the first thing they want to know when they get to town is, what time can I leave on Thursday? You can't government a complex government like America just working a couple of days a week. So a lot of those things have contributed to it. There are some legislative changes that have also contributed to it. The fact that Congress now can't earmark particular projects for their districts or their states. It's a whole combination of things that now we're going to have to try to figure out, how do we break this gridlock and get things moving again.
Terrific answers. Let me turn to my colleague Cindy Sain for another question.
As you both just mentioned, one of the things you cite as a reason for the lack of chemistry, rapport, cooperation, and compromise on Capitol Hill is the de facto three-day work week, which has members rushing to National Airport most Thursday afternoons to return home to their families, who mainly live in home districts across the country. House Speaker Paul Ryan even sleeps in his office, a clear sign that he has no ties to Washington. When you were both leaders in the Senate in the 1990s, did you have a lot of members and even congressional leaders sleeping in their offices? How and when did this change? Senator Lott, let's start with you.
Well, a lot of things have changed from when we were in leadership and when we were in the House and the Senate, but I knew of no members that slept in their offices in the 70s, 80s, and even 90s. This is a recent phenomenon. Clearly, in my opinion, it's inappropriate. And my friend there, Tom Daschle, likes to refer to it as the cheapest form of public housing. But it is a clear indication that they don't want to appear to put down roots here in Washington. But that is a part of the issue, because they don't get to know each other. They don't have time to really consider legislation like tax policy or energy policy, whatever it may be. And so I think the fact that they don't bring their families, they come into town, all they want to do is to get out. They don't even synchronize their schedules. Quite often the House is in session, the Senate's not. The Senate works 3 weeks out of the month, usually three on and one off. The House works 2 weeks on and two off. The job is in Washington. And I think, though, even more than these things, the biggest thing that's missing in Washington now is communication. The president doesn't like to talk to Congress. The leaders of the parties in the Senate don't like to talk to each other. And if you don't have that kind of communications, it's very hard to come to terms of how you're going to proceed, let alone what you're going to do.
Thank you. And Senator Daschle?
Well, I agree completely with what Trent just said. I do think that there's an intimidation factor. People are afraid today of getting primary competition, in part because they've worked with the other side. They've communicated with the other side. They've governed with the other side. And there's this big debate about whether you find common ground or stand your ground. And more members of Congress are intimidated in terms of their ability, their interest in finding common ground. Standing your ground seems to be the mantra of some of these extreme positions on either side of the aisle, and that's made a big factor. The only thing I would add to the really excellent list of factors that Trent already mentioned, I think there's also an economic issue. One of the problems I think is becoming clearer and clearer is that members of Congress have a hard time affording two houses, and so if they can't afford two houses, obviously they're going to pick one in their district, because that's almost a requisite politically. And so I think that, too, is a contributing issue and something we're going to have to address.
Well, gentlemen, let's turn now to the executive branch. And first to you, Senator Lott, to answer this question. What role do you think President Barack Obama plays in this current era of lack of bipartisanship? He's often blamed for failing to engage with the Congress, but can you really blame him when current Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said early on that his primary goal was to make Mr. Obama a one-term president, a goal that obviously failed, but cooperation has not increased during the president's second term?
I do think the president has to take his share of the blame. After all, when you talk about leadership in Washington, it really begins at the White House. And you need that direct and continuous communication. You may not like dealing with members of Congress or the chairman of the Budget Committee or the chairman of Tax Writing Committee, the Finance Committee, but you need to be talking with them if you're going to get a trade bill or if you're going to have tax policy. So communication is such a critical point. And I understand that it's not always pleasant, but, you know, after 9/11, Tom Daschle and two other leaders of the Congress, and I, we met with the president almost every Tuesday morning, or every Tuesday morning we were in session. We used to meet with President Clinton all the time, and he burned up the phone. He would call Tom, he'd call me all hours of the day or night. He wasn't hesitant at all. And even back in the Reagan era, every Tuesday that Congress was in session, he would have a 9 o'clock meeting with the leadership, quite often bipartisan, but sometimes just Republican leadership. But it was regular. You need that type of interaction. And when you do have that kind of communication, for instance, one of the better achievements in recent years was budget agreement that was reached between now Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, and Senator Patty Murray from Washington State, with the approval, in effect, of the White House. That's the kind of relationships you need in order to get things done in Washington.
Let me turn to you, Senator Daschle, for the same question. Do you think President Obama plays a role in this current era of hyper-partisanship, even when current Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell called for him to be a one-term president? Clearly, there wasn't much of a hand to reach out toward. Where do you think the problem is?
Well, I think there's plenty of blame to spread around, and certainly the president is part of the challenge here. He acknowledged it pretty much in his last State of the Union message. He indicated he wishes that he could have reached out more and been more inclusive. But going back to Trent's point, you know, Bill Clinton was actually impeached by the Republican House and yet found an opportunity to help balance the budget and deal with welfare reform and transportation and a whole array of issues, in part because he was, at the time, they called it compartmentalization. He compartmentalized. He set that aside and looked for areas where he could reach out and agree and find areas of common ground. And I think that's really what one has to do. A good leader is a persistent leader. A good leader is a listener. A good leader is somebody who can be inclusive and find ways to overcome the obstacles that exist. And whether it's the president or leadership in Congress or virtually anybody else, if you're going to govern in this eclectic, very, very complicated country of ours, you've got to find abilities to overcome the obstacles that are there. President Obama had them, but so did his predecessors. And I think the next president is so incumbent upon all of those who are elected after November to do a better job of reaching out, to be inclusive, and find ways to cooperate.
You're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guests are Senators Tom Daschle, from whom you just heard, and Senator Trent Lott. Both are former Senate majority leaders from opposite sides of the aisle and authors of a new book, Crisis Point: Why We Must and How We Can Overcome Our Broken Politics in Washington and Across America. I'm Carol Castiel, along with VOA congressional correspondent Cindy Sain. And this is a reminder that our Press Conference USA podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to a loyal listener from Nairobi, Kenya, Joseph Kaunge. If you want to hear your name on the show, please send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on Facebook. And now a question for my colleague Cindy Sain.
Turning a little bit to the present campaign, in your book, you both seem to value the political insider, someone who has years or even decades of experience actually governing. But in this campaign season, voters are flocking to outsider Donald Trump, who has no governing or political experience, and to a lesser degree, Senators Ted Cruz and Bernie Sanders, who are running as opposed to Washington and a rigged system. How do you explain this desire of so many voters to blow up Washington and their solution to turn to someone without governing experience? Let's see, I think it's Senator Daschle's turn to go first.
Well, I think there's a disillusionment towards Washington right now in just about every context. And I think what you see is a significant percentage of the voters who are responding to that disillusionment by saying, look, we don't have any confidence any longer in the insiders. They don't seem to be able to function. And because of this extraordinarily high level of dysfunction in government and Congress, maybe we ought to get somebody from the outside, somebody who hasn't had that long history. I can understand that frustration, but just with anything else, I can't imagine asking a doctor who's never performed a heart operation to do a heart transplant. That may not be a perfect analogy, but I think experience does count. I mean, Trent and I learned a lot, and I think we became far better leaders over time as a result of experience and the judgment that comes from the different challenges one has to face on a daily basis. We're not going to have that with outsiders, and that's a concern.
Well, I think it's a mistake to be looking just for outsiders. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to have people that's always served in the Congress or in Washington, but you need the knowledge of leadership and governing. That's why I've been for John Kasich from the beginning. John Kasich was in the Congress. He worked on the budget. He worked on defense policy. He's been in the private sector. He's governor of Ohio. But I think what happened is maybe the leaders in Washington and the leaders of both parties underestimated how people were feeling about the tax burden and regulations in terms of how do you do, you know, run a small business in America with all the regs you have to comply with. People said, okay, well, look, we elect Republicans to be in charge of the House and Senate. Maybe they'll deal with deficits and debt. And that hasn't happened. So leaders need to be attuned to the people. I've come to the conclusion that Washington has truly underestimated the concern in America about how we deal with the immigration issue, as well as trade. Now, I'm very much for immigration reform, and I'm for trade legislation, but I don't think we have sufficiently explained ourselves. We haven't been able to convince the people that trade around the world is good for America, not just good for Japan or Vietnam or whomever. So there's a lot of things that contribute to it, but I've watched other leaders come to Washington and, okay, I'm an outsider, I'm going to change the way Washington works, and they don't succeed because if you don't have the experience, you can't get the job done.
Gentlemen, I have a quick follow-up on that question. And first to you, Senator Lott, why do you think Republicans in Congress haven't rallied more around your candidate, John Kasich, who is arguably more appealing for a cross-section of people in the country, both right. Democrats and right. Republicans?
Right.
You know, he was a member of Congress. He's a governor. He's from near my hometown, Pennsylvania. I mean, he seems like a decent human being that could appeal to many people and give the Democratic candidate a run for his or her money. Why have they chosen, for example, Ted Cruz, who is arguably much more inflammatory or have less consensus?
Well, I think you just answered it partially, what you just said. If you're inflammatory, if you have outrageous things to say, if you appeal to people's dark side or their negative feelings, that seems to have more appeal. If John Kasich has been positive from the beginning, he's principled, he's stuck by his guns, he has gotten things done. But there were several reasons for it. One, this may be the year of the outsider and the performer. And somebody that's been on the inside and knows how to get the job done has actually done the job, may not have as much appeal. But part of his problem, he was one of 17. And on most of their early debates, he was lucky if he got 2 minutes. I think a lot of the country is still getting to know John Kasich. I saw some numbers recently that show that only about 50% of the people have an opinion, favorable, unfavorable. And with him, it's more favorable than unfavorable. But still, a good number of people don't know who he is because he hasn't had the coverage. And maybe it's because he has not really outlined a vision enough that has a broad enough appeal. But it's a concern to me. But we may go to a convention, and who knows? John Kasich may still be the nominee.
Well, a similar question to you, Senator Daschle, on the Democratic side. We still have Senator Clinton seen as an insider and currently the front runner. But Bernie Sanders, you know, is seen as sort of the outsider, the maverick, and he's gaining on her. How do you account for that?
Well, I think he's connected with a lot of voters who feel disenfranchised, who don't feel as if there's the kind of energy and the kind of enthusiasm for somebody who's been in politics, in Hillary's case, for several decades now. And I think while he's not a fresh face, he is a new face to the national scene, and he has a message that resonates with young people when it comes to education and health care and minorities to a certain extent, maybe not as much on the African-American side. But I think he's resonating with a lot of disenchanted voters. That's what both Donald Trump and Ted Cruz are able to do on the Republican side to a certain extent, and certainly Bernie Sanders is doing that on the Democratic side. That disenchantment is palpable, and I think Trent's right. We probably haven't done a good enough job in talking precisely about how many of the things that have been done or that we advocate doing resonate and get the kind of understanding that is so critical to the average voter. That average voter today is frustrated, alienated, and disillusioned, and they're going to vote for people who they think can bring new direction to Washington, and that isn't somebody like Hillary Clinton or John Kasich.
Back to you, Senator Lott. Let's look at recommendations. You've both done a terrific job in diagnosing the problem, whether it's the 24/7 news cycle, senators and members of Congress staying, you know, only 3 days a week in Washington and trying to get on a plane to get back home, not meeting with each other, cultivating relationships, rapport, chemistry, money in politics. What about some recommendations? So first to you, Senator Lott, again, in this climate where the outsider seems to be more popular, a lot of what you're recommending sort of goes against conventional wisdom. Nonetheless, what are four or five concrete suggestions that you think might gain traction in this political climate?
Well, first of all, we're long overdue for broad-based tax reform. We haven't had a real tax reform bill since the Reagan years, 1986. An example is that Republicans and Democrats both broadly agree that our corporate tax rate is too high. It's the highest in the world of developed countries, and it's contributing to our companies moving their headquarters to Mexico or to Ireland. It's called inversions. Everybody knows it needs to be done, but nobody has really laid out a clear agenda that, look, there's some things we could do in tax policy that would help create jobs, would help people to feel more secure in their jobs. So that's one place. Clearly, I think that people would be attracted to the idea that we need to get the avalanche of regulations that government is putting on people, small businesses, union members, everybody, to get that under control. One of the places I think they need to focus is on energy policy. We are so blessed in America with a broad-based energy capability, but we are not taking full advantage of it. And yet, it's one of the best ways we compete with our challengers around the world, including Russia and Iran. So why haven't we focused on energy policy? And then last but not least, and this is one that will be more tricky to put out there as a positive thing, is I think we should have trade agreements. It is in the best interest of America, but we've not always explained that it has to be done in such a way that protects our labor workers, our environment, and it creates jobs, because America can create more than we can consume, and we need a market to send it to. So some things like that, I believe, could have a lot of appeal.
Well, those are terrific issues, Senator Lott. And now let me turn to Senator Tom Daschle. Senator Daschle, for your view on what needs to be done specifically, and I was wondering if you could address some of the structural issues that you both have diagnosed, such as gerrymandered, the so-called redistricting, where you have lots of Republicans in one district and lots of Democrats, or the money in politics, the ability for members of Congress to spend more time together. What kinds of measures do you think can be taken to jumpstart solving these structural issues?
Well, we break our recommendations down into three categories: electoral reform, congressional reform, and citizen engagement. On electoral reform, having independent commissions in each state draw up independent boundaries free from the kind of political influence that oftentimes drives the district boundary definitions today is really one of the most important things we can do. We can't necessarily all agree on whether money is speech. I think money is property and not speech, but that's a very legitimate issue. But we can come up with ways to limit the amount of time and to try to discourage this ever-present amount of fundraising that goes on. Far more transparency could go a long way to helping better understand the repercussions and the aspects of fundraising that today just don't get into the sunlight like they should. In the congressional reform context, I think it's really important to have a five-day work week, to make sure that we stay here Monday through Friday so we get to know each other a little bit better. Joint caucuses, going back to the old regular order approach, that is, run the Senate the way we used to. We used to have very constructive and vigorous debates on an array of issues, and we don't do that anymore. It's really rare. But having that regular order and going back to the filibusters of the past when actually you had to hold the floor makes a big difference. But there are a number of procedural things that are really important. And then I think thirdly, having citizen engagement, recognizing the importance of voting, moving votes to Saturdays, and finding ways to encourage broader participation among voters themselves, maybe even encouraging citizen participation in government by having maybe a 1 or 2 year period of time when all young people actually serve in some volunteer capacity. All of those ideas are ones that we've thought about a good deal and proposed in the book, and I think could go a long way. The bottom line, and I think both Trent and I would emphasize this, is we need leadership. We're not advocating giving up your philosophy or your passion about issues, but at the end of the day, we just need people to demonstrate capacity for leadership, and that's critical.
You know, with regard to the things that Tom mentioned on the gerrymandering issue, the way districts are drawn to pretty much protect the incumbents, that's beginning to be changed now to a degree by the courts with recent decisions in North Carolina and Florida. But I think still there's more that could be done there. And we recommended in our book a process like they had in Washington State where they had a well-known Democrat, a well-known Republican, just the two of them. They had hearings all over the state. They drew the lines, took it to the people of the state. People felt like it was a fair and reasonable way to do it. With regard to the cost of campaigns, I mean, it is just an unbelievable amount of time now that goes to it and the money. So how do you deal with that? Well, we advocate not just campaign finance reform, but campaign reform. We need to take a look, for instance, at our primary system to decide on a president in America. Is the process we have now good? It's been going on for over a year. We still don't have a result. You know, it's front-end loaded by states like Iowa and New Hampshire. Could we maybe have regional primaries and maybe just five of them instead of this long process? It's going to be difficult because Supreme Court decisions to limit the money, could we limit the time that spent in campaigns? But also in our book, we urge the importance of civic responsibility and civic involvement and voting. We, you know, urge that people be allowed to vote early. Make it easier to vote. Tom mentioned like voting on Saturdays instead of Tuesdays so the working people to go to work early and stay late can vote. So those are just some of the things that we think could help. And we also advocate 1 year of public service for everybody when they finish high school or when they get to be 18, whether it's fighting fires or Teach America or the National Guard. We think it would help contribute to an understanding of what our country is all about and civic responsibility.
Those are terrific recommendations. And just quickly, a quick answer for both of you. Senator Daschle, what kind of traction are these recommendations getting out there throughout America? I'm sure you've spoken to your colleagues, both in government and young people.
Well, I'm encouraged. Trent and I have been all over the country with book signings and speeches and presentations, and I've been really encouraged by the reaction we've gotten from audiences all over. We've talked to some of our colleagues, and they're too. But, you know, it takes more than just a book. It takes more than just a speech. You really have to keep at it, and we hope that this might ignite organizational effort and leadership effort to keep the drumbeat going. We want to get this done and move in that direction, and we know that you can't give up. You've got to keep trying.
Well, I personally look forward to shorter campaigns and voting on Saturdays.
All right. That's great.
And I have to turn to my colleague for one last question for you both.
Yes, we do have an example of a bipartisan effort right now in the Senate, but it still is controversial. It is a bill that would allow the families of victims of the September 11th, 2001 attacks to sue the Saudi Arabian government for any role it might have played in the terrorist attacks. Could you comment on this legislation, starting with you, Senator Lott?
Well, I'd have to take my look at, you know, the legislation itself. That's a case where Congress needs to be very careful in communicating with the administration, the different entities that might be involved. That it is a legal matter. I am a lawyer. I learned a long time ago when it's something like this, your heart may say yes, this needs to be done, but you need to make sure you've thought it through and all the ramifications of what it means, not just for these families that deserve some additional consideration, but the impact it would have in a myriad of areas, including things in the future.
Senator Daschle?
I agree with Trent. The other piece of wisdom is always beware of unintended consequences. I think there would be a whole rash of unintended consequences that would come from this. Saudi Arabia's already indicated they would pull out all of their investments in the United States and probably not cooperate at all in the Middle East. I think their partnership, even though we probably have many differences of opinion, has been important to us. And to lose that partnership and that trust could have huge unintended consequences.
The book is Crisis Point, Why We Must and How We Can Overcome Our Broken Politics in Washington and Across America. The authors, former Senator Tom Daschle, Democrat, and former Senator Trent Lott, Republican. Senators, thank you so much for your precious time and insights, and congratulations again on your terrific book.
Thank you very much.
Great being with you.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Vasco Volorich. And joining me on the program was VOA Congressional Correspondent Cindy Sain. I'm Carol Castiel.
Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.